So at the beginning of this almost one-day retreat that we have here, from now till tomorrow, would anyone like to ask or share something? I'd especially, yes, I was going to say someone who hasn't spoken in the hall, so great. Yeah. So let me just summarize or repeat broadcast. His question is exactly about this being the last day and feeling some excitement about what may happen after tomorrow. And it connects to a question within meditation when there comes creativity or energy, and he's doing hands like this. More or less. More beautifully, but...
I don't know which one, in the moment, no one is right.
Yeah. Can everybody hear, maybe? No, okay. So he's saying it's especially hard to meditate when the thoughts that are coming are thoughts that he really likes. And there's creativity, and it feels meaningful. And he described thought after thought after thought, and I saw a few people kind of going, yep. And then, so inside there's a part that wants to stay with the creativity, let's say, if I can simplify maybe, and another part that says, no, I want to meditate. Is that kind of, yeah? And neither one is right, so what to do? Is that the kind of? So I have in my page, the first note is, who is guiding and deciding? And who is planning this talk where you ask a question that I didn't know you were going to ask? It's cool. We're in a field together. Human beings are not, we're not just what we think. And the thinking shows that in the synchronicity. So something like a title is How Doing Happens. It's continuing that same kind of inquiry we've had through the week. How doing happens when we're not busy getting stuff done. How doing happens. Doing stuff. Do. To do. G. Doing. G. Yes. Not towing. So I had a question in a note earlier this week. There was not a name, so I couldn't respond. So I'm sorry to that person. But anyway, fits to the talk now of having voices coming and saying, follow that pain or go to that pleasure. And should we dismiss those thoughts or follow those thoughts? And so it's a question around who's deciding and guiding within the meditation. Deciding and guiding in the meditation, for example, but also in life. Okay, I try my best. Thank you. So if we come back to your example, though, first. If resting happens, eventually there's energy. And how does that fit with rest and deep? How does that go together? So I want to say a few things about that. First of all, I think our idea is that those are opposites, having energy and resting and going deep. It's the first idea would be that can't be in the same body, mind, or room. Is it, am I still going down? Yeah? Okay. And so investigating your own experience of both resting and creativity and also deep. So we've already talked a bit about resting and how weird it is that by doing less, we get more. The doing less of the resting, we receive more than we could. I mean, where else would we get energy from? Actually, where would we get creativity from? So starting to let that sink in, its experience, letting it sink in. Letting it sink in. We get a lot from doing that little. And then also, what is creativity? In our minds, I think creativity is separate from rest, and it's about doing stuff that's outgoing. Going out, putting out, output. But I think what I've heard from other people and in my own experience, when we're in a creative flow, we're in and out in a way that doesn't feel like we're in and out. In a way, we could say that feels meaningful. Though exactly would be hard to say any particular meaning. So I like that you use that word. It feels meaningful. But I think there's a quality that we can feel meaningful. Something can feel meaningful. And let's investigate what's the question? The word meaningful? No? Okay. Okay. When something feels meaningful, what's happening? What do we mean by that? I don't think we mean that we're full of meanings, like this means that, and that means that, and that means that. I think we're empty of that in a way, and it feels meaningful. Like when there's a contact with someone, it feels meaningful, I think, when there's less output going on. And we find ourselves in that, is there an inner and an outer? Kind of and no. Kind of yes and kind of no. So I'm all for meaningfulness as a quality. And I'm also all for questioning whether we need to know what it means in a thinking way. I would say only when necessary. So we still have the same question. I'm resting, I'm meditating, and now I have all this energy and all these great ideas, and it feels good, and it seems the opposite of meditating. It seems the opposite of resting. Maybe it doesn't seem or feel in that moment the opposite of deep. I think when we're saying it feels meaningful, we're feeling some depth. Maybe. So on retreat, the proposal is to leave aside output for now so that we can really get absorbed into the source of creativity and rest as possibly one place. If we acknowledge how filling and fulfilling and creative rest is, it's not as surprising that it could be that there's something like a source of rest that's also a source of creativity. Or maybe somewhere nearby each other in meditation. And so when a lot of creative ideas are coming with an output kind of feeling, quality, less meaningful, more outputty, I would suggest one possibility is feeling in the body, either how the thoughts feel in the body or what's pushing the thoughts. What's the output push? Where does that come from? And unlike myself, I'm going to give you an answer that you can play with and feel if it has any sense for you. I think behind our pushiness, I'm still not quite answering your question, so not to take it as that yet. We'll get there, I hope. I think behind our outputting would be something like fear, something like shakiness. Earlier today, Michal said it felt very exposed to talk about what she said, because it was not in the normal conventional idea of a human being up here. It was like, in the mess, in the less known, in the more intimate with life, no escape kind of area. So something that feels fear in being exposed. And the word exposed is more of a fearful kind of a word rather than open, right? Feeling open could be nice. Feeling exposed I don't think sounds very nice. And again, thank you for the courage. So if we take that word exposed, or sometimes people say feeling vulnerable, or we could summarize it as fear. And it might pop out seeming to be fear of this or fear of that, but maybe we can keep coming back down to, what if it's fear? And what if it's an understandable fear? It's not like you did the math wrong and then you'll just fix that column and you'll be okay. Like, it's understandable. To fear being exposed. Do you agree? What makes it understandable to fear being exposed? What is it in exposedness that is understandably scary? Vulnerability. Okay, that's good enough, right? I think there's, and then, okay, also, what is vulnerability? Okay, we haven't been welcomed when we've exposed ourselves sometimes. And we've seen that happen to others. Okay, but what it is maybe is a smallness at the kind of mercy of something bigger and stronger. Can feel that way. Something smaller at the mercy of something bigger and stronger. At the mercy means I don't have the power to stop you from doing to me something I don't want, or not doing to me something I do want. So if there's an outpouring of outputting, we could have the chance now on this beginning of this one-day retreat now. We have this gorgeous, precious gift that we might have the chance to actually feel if there is a fear behind all the outputting. That would be helpful to know in a felt, experiential way. What's behind all that that I can't stop throwing myself away? It's not easy to approach whatever is behind the outputting. Let's say it might be fear for many of us. And so don't just assume you can just go in there. How's the translating corner? It's okay. Thank you. Output. Also, not only in Hebrew or English. Yeah. What's the Hebrew of output? I will say. It's always a fun time to see all the answers. Yeah. That's, I agree. It's a good question. What do I mean output? One example is there's so many thoughts of how many good things I could do tomorrow. One sec. I want to give a few more examples. Please hold and remember, but let me, yeah. I'm slow sometimes. Mostly slow. So one example is the many thoughts of how exciting it is that tomorrow when I speak, I can tell so-and-so my insights about them. Please don't. Unless they ask you and they mean it. Even then, probably don't. Let it come organically, maybe next year. Or it could be output is more the fearful thoughts of, oh my God, I have to go out of silence. I want to stay here forever or whatever. But it's not as settling. It's outgoing. And I'm especially referring to that when there's creativity, whether it's creativity that's in a flow, then that might be different. But when it's creativity that's like, where's the volume? Turn it down a little bit. If doing is pushed from fear and lack, yes. So she's asking if output is the same as doing. So if doing is pushed from a sense of lack or hiding or showing off or trying to get or trying to prove, trying to earn my place, some version of coming from a place of belief in lack, something not enough that I have to first do, feel, attend, heal, fix, show, prove, sign, whatever, then I could maybe settle. Then I could maybe live. Then I could maybe be okay. Output could also include, if you allow me to use the word poorly, other outgoing things that are more that are not so much like a creative idea, but fearful output, like outgoing attention that we can't easily find the volume to turn down. What do they think of me? What do I think of them? Even non-verbally, the sense of, do I have enough space? Are they going to take my space? Could be, that's like outputting. We're throwing energy away. It's not comfortable. Though we're so used to it, it's our comfort zone, but it's not comfortable. Yes. Okay, so a connection between fear and output now feels more clear. Not, okay. So there's creativity and flow that's not necessarily because I feel afraid I'm doing. There might be fear, a different kind, because I'm going beyond what I think I am. Something is moving through me. But it's not fear as the motor that I can't turn off or down. Okay. So if there's output and you feel it uncomfortable, And also comfort zone-y, like it's very familiar, then one way is to feel thoughts in the body, what's happening in your body when that's going on, including possibly the sense of how is there energy that's throwing away? Is there also a cultural reinforcement that this is what you're supposed to do? Almost everything we do. It would be hard to think of most thoughts are that. It would be hard to think of a thought that's not. If it's not, it has a really different quality. It's more like that Buddha thought before he was a Buddha. Maybe there's another way. The memory from childhood that felt so good for no reason, not because of a program impact. Not because a button was pushed, he feels good. He doesn't know why he feels good. It's generosity coming. And natural, it responds, it co-responds. It's, wow, this could be deepening. So output, also the vast flood rolls onward, but yield yourself and it floats you upon it. The vast flood of thinking. Life energy coming through, translated into thought, translated into stories, translated into emotion, also translated into bodies. And sometimes we can free that energy a little bit. We can let it free. We can appreciate how life moves sometimes. And that's when we're starting to get more accustomed to, more familiar with, how life moves when we're not, it's not translated and thrown out. Into the known stories. So, on retreat, feeling in the body, feeling the emotion behind in the body, but more effective when we really develop friendliness. As a slowly, slowly, what about this main atmosphere inside you? What about that? What about this having a main atmosphere of friendliness? Can you feel at all how then all those techniques would work so much better? We would need so much less. Technique. So it's a long journey to get friendly with friendliness. We feel like, yeah, a little bit in my pocket, but to live in Israel, you don't understand. With a little more friendliness, then also we find our bandwidth is bigger. Bandwidth. Capacity. Range of motion, so to speak, also. But that more energy can be present. And it's not terrible. Energy in the form of friendliness, there can more can fit in. And there's more space. So I'm still saying on retreat, the proposal is, even though it's exciting, even though the ideas are great and it feels meaningful, I would suggest tuning into how meaningful feels in your body. How does that go? Tuning into, usually it's a mix, even when there's like a sense of a good flow of creativity that is not bossy or pushy or afraid. It's not like a bully of creativity. It's often mixed. There might still be a sense of lack, like, I've got to get this now because what if I forget it? Or, and so feeling the lack, again, would be a chance to access like the plug of where the programs are plugged into the life source energy. And we don't need to like yank it out. It will dissolve with friendliness. And the cool thing I find that's really worth the many hours of practicing little tiny bits of being in touch with that fear that's behind the pushiness. Like literally, I can't even say how much of a tiny bit of a second you might touch the fear and be kicked out so many times. And that's still in friendliness, okay? In friendliness. Like we might with a hurt animal. We wouldn't say, okay, you let me touch you for a third of a second three times. Now you listen to me. I'm going to pet you. And this is way more than that. More subtle and more powerful. More important than petting the cat. So we know how life responds to friendliness and patience and courage and humor. So it's long and there's a lot of patience, and then all of a sudden it's like, hey, I'm petting you. And you like it. And then the cat's gone. And that was good. In friendliness, it's not an insult to us that my engineering failed. Okay? Wow, friendliness made a connection for, we can't even count how little of a time. And so many times like that. Okay? And gradually, friendliness from both sides, aliveness from both sides, makes a way. And the good thing is, really, in the end, it's more that we're afraid of our fear, which is that we're afraid of the power. And so as there's friendliness and we start to be in touch with this very powerful place, not place, in touch, kicked out, in touch, kicked out, friendliness, humor, patience, human situation, why not? Being inside that part when it's now no longer a part. Is such a relief. As friendliness starts to things soften, and as softening, more power, so that's a process. Softening, more energy. Love keeps going like, yep, bigger, more energy in the same space, but the space is now bigger and there's even more softening. Softening and power is present, softening and power is present, rest and creativity and depth, softness, power. That part that was so apart is no longer apart. It's not apart, like separate, and it's not away from us. And we're inside. The word I find the most helpful is tenderness. Tenderness. That would be good to know in Hebrew. If we have. Rakut. Or? There's always at least three answers, I find. Another? Adinut. So it's a mixture between rakut and adinut. Yes. Yes, please do. He wants to check if he understood. The part that's way back in there is the hurt kitten. It doesn't feel way back down in there as my deepest core, but it's not out there. It's the fear that's behind. Suddenly it doesn't feel like, oh, that deep down place that I don't want to touch it. I want to pretend it's not there. I hate it. It's not out there. It's way back behind all the programming. So yes, then we're inside after a long process of becoming friends and becoming friends with friendliness and becoming friends with love and becoming friends with power and becoming friends with space and becoming friends with contact. And then we become friends, this place and me. And it's tenderness. It's rakut adinut. Also, from there,
remembering.
Yes, exactly. Remembering and realignment, like we've been saying slowly over the week, in the flow. Yeah. But it could be cool to consider if the shift of, if our greatest fear turns out to be, home. That we could belong in that power. That power could be friendly. Especially when we behave with friendliness. It matters. Then realignment. So the idea of how doing happens, slowly, one part of it is coming into what we thought was vulnerability. It is. I mean, we experience fear of being exposed, and we have reason to. But still we, find that it's necessary, or we're curious to go closer into what we thought and feared was the core of my being, that let nobody know how awful it really is. Nobody understands this deep, dark hole inside me, and all of us having the same experience in different words, different ways, but through friendliness to be inside there. And then realignment. And then insight. And then creativity. Realignment of the whole constellation of ourselves, body, mind, whatever other names of everything, families, countries. So I don't want to leave off continuing to respond before I continue with more of this page on my notes. Was there something? Someone said something? Okay. What's the word? Because probably someone else.
Alignment.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember that Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
It would be good to have the three options of the word. I can't hear them, though. Anybody want to say? Synchronized. After a massage and the body comes into a different or just you give up on your project for a while and then the breath is bigger and that's a different body and mind. And then you film it. Why not lie on my belly on the grass? Or why not have a cup of tea? Okay. Synchronizing, I'm feeling into, because it includes time, so, but it's curious, I'm curious, maybe. It's another good element of what happens with tenderness. So after retreat, touching into source, resting into source, resting, a creative movement comes. It could be a thought, it could be a happening. It could be with the quality of remembering, probably. Even if it's something you never thought of before, like, how come I never thought of that before? Might be there. Or it could equally be, who could ever think of such a thing? Who could ever think of such a thing? Could also be. But sometimes there's a feeling of remembering, and it literally can be, oh yeah, I keep forgetting for 3 years now to go ahead and whatever, clean the refrigerator or sign my will, you know. Or meditate. Get a new pair of glasses. It's so both practical, it doesn't care. Creativity is like, yeah, this is possible and good now. How about it? So off retreat, it's important to still have some time that you're not inviting intrusive movement, but you are happy to have brilliant insights and inspirations. And it's a game to experiment with. So I would recommend there's some time that you don't interrupt yourself to write it down, and other times that you do. So, for example, for me, if I can, first thing in the morning when I'm waking up, I have a little tiny notebook that my daughter made for me and something to write with nearby. So in the dark, important, I can sometimes find it. And in the dark and lying down, scribble something that I might be able to read enough of later. I find that if I sit up or if I turn on the light, it might be gone. And it's sometimes I'm like, what? I remember how deep that was. I have no idea what it was. It's okay. It's not like it exists only when I can put it into words. It's not that it exists only when we think it. Thinking is coming afterwards. It's the last one to know. But it can be so helpful, since we're so used to thinking as if that's all there is and what we are and what matters, to have some way of recording, if needed, something that might come through when we're more in, more with wholeness. So some space where you won't interrupt unless you're really sure, like, this one is, I need it now. and some space where you can freely play with coming and going. Other things like I like to jog. So if you like to walk, swimming would be more difficult to take a note. But there could be ways of helping oneself remember. Like, what's the thought? Maybe give yourself a key word or a key image or a key place in the body or something. Or where am I in the lake when this is coming up? That might help put myself back there. What was it? And waiting, like we might wait to remember a dream, or when something's on the tip of your tongue, we say in English, that person's name or whatever. Like, it's a more kind of physical invitation for something to come up. And then following through. She's saying it's a hard gap between recognizing what a beautiful insight or inspiration. Wow, I'm so glad I remembered that. It feels good to remember that, and maybe a little scary sometimes. Or also sometimes, what a relief. I didn't know how I was going to do those three things at once, but that's how. Great, thank you. I think as we play with this thing of maybe sometimes less is more, and we really feel for a quality of however it is for you in rest, wholeness or stillness or smoothness, coolness, spaciousness, silkiness. When a thought comes from there and with that, or a gesture, a movement, whatever, whatever we can do, like community gather round, inner and outer community gather round, and help me find my way for this. So maybe there's a friend that you can share these kind of inspirations with, and not policing, but helping. Gently, with humor, the how many times we fall out of it again. And sometimes what's cool is when we finally get around to doing it, or we just do it, it's like, oh, so simple. Or, wow, so strong. If it goes well, be careful. Remember where it came from. If we also think back to that I want peace or I want what, remembering where it comes from. It doesn't come from the small I. It's not quite yours. But you get to serve that beautiful, beyond imagination happening. And that's fulfillment. So this question of who is guiding and deciding among all those great ideas, who is guiding and deciding in a meditation? Okay, mindfulness, but of what? Who's deciding what to be mindful of, and maybe also from where? And it could be interesting to play first with the quality of mindfulness. If the quality could have less pushiness, if we're not being mindful out of fear, trying to stay busy, or trying to get it right, or if I do this, then everybody says you get better sleep or whatever. Got to keep up with everybody else. But the quality, or from where, or why. And if it could be like, well, why not? or love? Or, I don't know, but something spacious. And staying with the quality for a while, let's say a quality of wholeness really does it for you, turns you on. So quality of wholeness decides, mindful of what? And decides doesn't need to be a mental process. At first, it might be a mental process. Should I be aware of my belly or should I be aware of my feet? I don't know. Okay, let me be with wholeness. And wholeness seems to want to go to the feet, but there's all those good reasons to be in the belly. And we have a kind of back and forth sometimes. And we go with one or the other, and it's both are good. But honestly, we can feel from wholeness the direction was down, maybe. For example, that time. What, is there a word to? Wholeness, okay, another good one. Schling? Schlemut from Shalom. So, tuning into our quality that comes about that we love. And there'll be times where you're like, that doesn't happen to me. I don't know what you're talking about. But it's not true. So when you're in a different mood, maybe try again to feel, what would you love to kind of answer to or live by or live in? Or when you do feel restful or loved or whatever, how is that felt? In a sensory way. Coming into that sensory way of, let's say for example, wholeness. We don't really need to decide then. It's not actually deciding. So it's like replacing something better than deciding. And that could be another title for this talk. It's like something better than what we think we want. Is that the spiritual instinct that we were talking about the other day? And I feel a little bit of hesitation because I haven't checked that through fully, but I think yes. But let's go into it more, a little bit more. So meditating, even when you think you're not meditating, there's so many thoughts, so much restlessness, etc. There's still some quality of on-retreatness that might even be part of why there's that many thoughts and that much agitation that day. And again, it's if only you knew that the others are often in the same wave, in their own way, at the same time, similar time. So from our individual small mind selves, trying to do our best and therefore tracking how is it going and how am I doing and missing most of what's happening, but we're sincere and earnest and we don't want to waste our retreat. We want to honor it. And so we're tracking how is it going, how am I doing? And sometimes a bigger question like, how would I know how I'm doing might come. That could be good. Take some of the pointedness out of like, how am I doing? How would I know how I'm doing? We wouldn't. How about that? But so even so, we're just doing our best and it's a mess basically. And occasionally we feel a little peace, and then we forget that we felt that because we're so upset that we're thinking again about the same thing that we thought we had finished with 5 years ago. And And even so, there's some kind of field of each person and of us, and things are coming up. Things are coming up to the love and to the space and to the listening and to that, even that sincerity that doesn't know how to know what I want to know and can't know it from there. Something comes up. Who's deciding what comes up when? If we could have a new assumption, in Hebrew, assumption? Anaha. Anaha. Or? Okay. That's it. All right. Anaha. Anaha. Hanaha. Hanaha. What does it mean again? Assumption. So it's one word, but it means two things. Does it mean three things? Come on. Okay. Okay. So yeah. It's a new assumption and it is a discount. It costs way less. What if what's coming up is coming up as part of your path? What if whatever is coming up, inner, outer, is coming up and can be part of your path? What's coming up inwardly, we could say, what if that is part of my path? Outwardly, we could say, what if this can be made into part of my path? So what's coming inwardly, what if that's part of my path? And what if just taking away the other assumption that costs more, that it must be wrong, whatever it is, it must be wrong. Especially if it's unpleasant, it's really got to be something wrong with me. Or the world, or the teacher, or the hall, or whatever. If it feels bad, I'm bad. That assumption costs us our lives. And so it's like slowly with friendliness, curiosity, humor, each other's company, letting that have some space between it feels bad, I'm bad. That assumption that I'm bad or they're bad or whatever, that assumption costs us our lives. Let it feel bad. Okay. We're not saying it doesn't feel bad. But if I don't assume it's something wrong with me, or wrong with how I'm meditating, or wrong with how they're teaching meditation, or wrong with the world, I assume this is part of my path, which includes all of those things. It's not apart from how the world is. And if practice matters, it matters because it's not apart from all of those things, including how the world is. Wait, come back to me. 1 second. Not 1 second. If something. if we discount that cost, we take off the belief with charged emotion that it's wrong. We disbelieve that. We disbelieve that because it hurts, it's wrong. We leave space for maybe there's another thing happening here. We have maybe enough energy to be with it as it is. And also to feel what is the hurt? How does it feel? Why does it hurt? What does it land on or in? And it's important to get the feeling of how, what if it's not something wrong? It's just thoughts arising, or it's just this feeling of too much energy. Then it's like, well, that's actually observation and insight. There's a feeling of too much energy. It starts to be more direct. We have a little bit more energy to be with it because we're not also tightening the screws on ourselves. It feels like too much energy. And then we could inquire in a little more. Too much energy means what? What does it feel like? If this might be part of my path. If this might be part of a healing process. If the healing process might be part of an awakening process. A coming back, a remembering, aliveness beyond ideas. A deeper home. And maybe we can, if you ever have that sense of remembering in quiet, remembering, even if it's remembering I need to feed the dog kind of thing, or if it's remembering a feeling of being loved, or remembering, oh, I want love, any kind of remembering, or remembering I have legs, I can feel them. This is not a trick question when I say who is remembering. So I don't mean exactly who, but like, where does that remembering feel like it's coming to or happening from, or remembering back together where? To what sort of source or center or something like that? Yes, Naomi. Please. Yes. Yes. So I want to hear that your voice can help all of us hear what just happened, where you said, oh, no, it's silly. And that it's the more important question that you're raising. Like, now let's get down into the bones here. So really thank you for speaking through that barrier that we mostly all have. The more important thing is, oh, that's silly. And it's the most important. So if we can come back to when feeling peaceful, something comes up. Maybe it's some turbulence. Maybe it's an insight. We might start to, so I'm just like almost like in the lab. Let's talk about that first and then spread out. In the contained, sorry, one sec. In the more contained atmosphere of meditations on retreat, sometime, or maybe off the schedule, but here over there on the lawn or whatever, something peaceful goes on and something comes up. It could be painful, it could be an awesome realization or inspiration. If our attitude is that we start to get the rhythm here, that's going to keep on happening. It's not like, oh, yay, it's pleasant, now I'm done. I'm going to stop here. Because love doesn't stop. And so what needs love comes to love, and love comes to that. And then that little bit that came up in that safe space, healing happens. The impact, the knot, the trauma gets a little bit more juice, a little bit more release, some unwinding. And then we need to flush that out. The body, it takes a cost on the body. Flush. Drink, literally, drink water, be in water, sleep, exercise, eat, whatever, you know your things or get to know them. So in this contained space, we can start to get the hang of where there's a rhythm and it goes together and it sometimes really sucks and it feels overwhelming and too much, and then it's sometimes really good, also can feel sometimes too much, and then the next unfolding goes on. And within a space, within peace. That starts to help us get the flavor for when we're having like a bit more of a meta view, not like metta loving kindness meta, but like overview or bigger sense, or but wait a second, I seem to be suffering a lot. Maybe there's another way. And so it can be important to feel when we are open and honestly and ready for an answer from ourselves, from somewhere unknown, maybe there's another way. And feeling where we're, yeah, I want another way, kind of, while sticking to this way. Or where sometimes it takes, where often it takes being more desperate. And what I'm hoping that you can find, what I find through deep rest, is that the willingness to actually change and find yourself being a different person than what you were before, which is not obvious, it's not common, that can come not from the kick in the butt. Not from when we're, so also when the kick in the butt, also when we're desperate, but not only. So sometimes we see someone else's path looks so much better, and that's torture, but sometimes it's like, oh, it could be more fun. Yeah, okay. Let's see, like with help from other people, from inside myself, when if that gives us permission to come more into our own version of Dharma, great. And even if we kind of copy them for a while in a way that doesn't quite fit, but it helps us kind of like training wheels on that bike, we get more confidence. And just by having that experience on the ground practice, it starts to happen that we're like, bicycle? Why bicycle? I want to fly. Who knows how to fly? Let's see. Where can I learn how to fly? At the same time, of course, there's a paradox. A lot of our suffering is, or let's say another way, it's a really, really deep place to see how different we all are, though so many things in common, that also, even though we can helpfully copy people, have permission from people, like things to try for ourselves. Each person's, I don't find a word other than to use maybe from borrowing from India, like karma. Something that looks like what we could call a karmic situation or situations. We all have things we would not wish on anyone. Why? I don't know. But we all have. And it does seem like some people have a lighter load. Is that better? We don't know, actually. But if there's a feeling of, this is too heavy, I want a lighter load, then let's feel openness toward lightness. Let's talk to friends where that we can feel, is there something I'm afraid of in lightness? I'm feeling a calling towards lightness. Like to really sincerely follow the little tiny clues that we get. If there's a sense of comparing that gets our attention, whether there's any feeling of jealousy or just possibility, doesn't matter so much. If we can take the message from there is, I want lightness. Which is, can we find like life wants lightness? Hey, lighten up. How could I lighten up? What was lightening up like when that happened before? What is it that feels most heavy? What does that need? What would help that more? And giving, I'm saying all these, blah, 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 but giving time for yourself to know, because you know. And also in conversation with people to know what we know. And also, okay, it's a mess. It doesn't mean anything bad about me that I'm suffering right now. And then that gives us enough of a break that we're like, oh. And we make a step and later can tell what the step was. So I don't know that there's anyone necessarily, you said, like who's deciding what a path is or whatever. I don't get a sense that there's someone deciding. And I don't get a sense that it's already ready made. But we walk along, and maybe there's several good options every time. And we go, if we're lucky, with one. And then from there, another step is possible. Maybe we could have gone on that branch too. And that could be good and then good. But then looking back, it does feel like, who could have designed such a path? So amazing and weird. I want to say a little bit more about acceptance, maybe a little more strongly than what I have, although it's time to stop. I'm thinking of, so this will be my attempt at a quick summary of it. I'm thinking of a man that I sometimes mention, Jacques Lucéran, who was a French guy in the French resistance to the Nazis, who as a child had an accident that blinded him when he was 8 years old. And he had the most wondrous life. And my teacher one time pointed out why that was possible. We wouldn't wish for anyone to have an accident at the age of 8, running out of the classroom and never be able to see with these eyes again. But he found a way to see without these eyes. That he could hike in the mountains and he could play with his friends, running around. But that just is like a, how is that possible when such a tragedy happened? My teacher pointed out that his parents never, ever said, what bad luck. Oh no, that's so terrible. And they also didn't keep him in the chair inside like one of his neighbors, one of his friends, or another blind boy. Not interacting, not touching, not being touched. So when we come to a time where we can feel something's not quite right here, or this is too heavy, I don't want this path, it can be such a good like gathering in and shedding for a leap. And so I'll end with some words of Etty Hillesum, also from the same time of World War II, but in Holland. And she says, give your sorrow all the space and shelter in yourself that is its due. Not tau due. Although that could be nice too. Yes, I will say it again. I will definitely repeat it. That it deserves. Give your sorrow, sorrow is sadness or grief, all the space and shelter in yourself that is its due, that it deserves, that it is worthy of, that it needs. Bearing it honestly and courageously. Bearing it. Honestly and courageously. Give your sorrow, we could say in the language of today's talk, give your tenderness all the space and shelter in yourself that it needs, that it wants, that helps to be in tenderness. Bearing it honestly and courageously. In the way that its gentle origins demand. So that's where sorrow and tenderness can feel. The gentle origins of sorrow. The gentle origins of a movement to make a shift, small or big, in the practice, in the path, in the way of living. Not from hating our suffering, but from letting the suffering, following it down back to why is it painful? And then she says, then you may truly say, life is beautiful. I can't read my handwriting. Someone knows this, I'm sure. Life is beautiful and so to be continued. You'll have to stay till tomorrow to find out. No, I will post it on the board when I can. Beautiful and so rich. Give your tenderness all the space and shelter, protection, not defensiveness, protection. What actually protects and gives space in yourself that the tenderness wants, that fits. That its gentle origins, that let the tenderness demands that space and shelter. So that it doesn't become defensiveness, hatred, being against ourselves, being against life and against our own suffering, coming inside. And then we may truly say, probably without words, life is so beautiful and so rich, no matter what circumstance. So sorry for keeping you. Shabbat shalom. Bon appétit.